Hello, ladies and gentlemen. As you all know, we have been doing two types of podcasts. We've done PixMix, which was randomly reviewing a Pixar film, but obviously not so random anymore because now every Pixar film is not just being randomly generated. It's basically just coming out in linear, so that's what we've been doing so far. And also we did Dream Machine, where we reviewed every DreamWorks film. But one thing that has always been bothering us is that which studio is actually better? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to DreamWorks versus Pixar.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to DreamWorks versus Pixar. My name is Patricia.
My name is Aaron.
So, over the years, we have been covering various films from both DreamWorks and Pixar. We've covered the Pixar shorts, and we have deduced on which have been our favorites and which have been our least favorites. And that is what the first episode is going to be about.
Yeah, so welcome to the war room where all the war is happening under above us, and we're basically marking our strategy, basically, to wonder how, you know, Pixar and DreamWorks all work their way throughout this. So we're going to be dividing this first episode up into two categories. So we're just going to go straight into two interesting categories, which I think will separate out both these two companies. So today we're going to cover what we think is the best Pixar animated film and the DreamWorks best animated film, and we're going to put them up against one another. And then later on in the episode, we're going to take the worst DreamWorks and Pixar animated film, and we're put those two up against one another. So that's basically how the first episode is going to play out.
Now, here's the thing. For those who have not tuned into either Dream Machine or PixMix, the way that we were able to choose what was the top five best and worst of the respected films was that in the first attempt of PixMix, we had combined my score with Aaron's score and a third party, which was Dan the Pixar Fan. And we had deduced that according to the three of us, Toy Story was the best Pixar film, and the worst Pixar film was Cars 2. Now, for Dream Machine, when we had finished off the first round, it was between Aaron and I's scores and you guys doing the votes on your favorite and least favorite DreamWorks films. And it was deduced that Shark Tale was the worst DreamWorks film and Shrek 2 is the best DreamWorks film. And so we're going to be taking a look at the best of the best and the worst of the worst. So we're going to be looking into Toy Story versus Shrek 2 and Shark Tale versus Cars 2. Now, I just want to preface this by saying that this is according to a combination of all of our scores and the scores from the respected people. Let me ask you a question. Is Toy Story your personal favorite Pixar film?
I would say it's, keep in mind, like, you know, when we were doing PixMix, that, you know, we ran into a lot of problems where a lot of Pixar movies were giving 10 out of 10. Like, you know, that was the good old days of Pixar, I guess you could say, when they were the gold standard. So, I mean, would Toy Story be, like, you know, my ultimate, you know, Pixar favorite movie? I mean, I would always say no, because, like, you know, I do like The Incredibles. I do like Ratatouille. Ratatouille basically is my all-time favorite, you know, Pixar movie. I absolutely love that movie. And so, I mean, and also there's a few others I think we'll probably go if we went through the entire Pixar library, which I say, yeah, that's definitely my favorite. But, I mean, you know, Toy Story, I think, is so important because this was the movie that basically started the entire thing off, you know, for Pixar. There is no Pixar without Toy Story. You know, like, that movie exists for, you know, for a very good reason within the Pixar library, because it's the first and it's the movie that's, you know, kicked off this whole, you know, phenomenon of, like, of gold-plated Pixar movies.
Yeah, and I do agree. I mean, when Pixar first started off in the 80s, they were just essentially, like, doing various shorts. Like, we even talked about this in PixMini. You know, we had The Adventures of, you know, Andre and Wally B. We talked about Red's Dream. We talked about Luxo Jr. And, yeah, we were talking about the early years of Pixar right before they started doing Toy Story. And before, you know, Toy Story, they were essentially, like, working on these shorts. They were working on commercials. And, yeah, it was Toy Story that pretty much just broke new ground around in animation. Toy Story was essentially the one that shook up the animation industry so much that it would never be the same. So we cannot deny of the cultural significance of Toy Story.
Yeah, and I think, so I guess also we know what our other contender on the other side here for DreamWorks is going to be Shrek 2. Now, Shrek 2, I think, was a very unexpected sequel, I think we could say, if, you know, with the story of Shrek is anything to be believed. So Shrek, effectively, for a lot of people within DreamWorks, basically was like the punishment project, I think, for everybody who, you know, weren't considered, like, you know, all that well within, you know, the DreamWorks, you know, world, if you will. So basically, they were given this to do for that. So, I mean, a lot of people expected, like, you know, The Prince of Egypt and various other movies alike, you know, to be the ones that would carry DreamWorks into the next, you know, next millennium. But no, the minute Smash Mouth hit and you saw Shrek for the first time, that was the movie that effectively would be carrying DreamWorks into, you know, another good couple of movies, and also be the most recognized, you know, character out of the DreamWorks library. So obviously Shrek 2 was going to come in, and not only did it basically take a very unexpected, really great story that it took from Shrek, but it expanded it basically threefold, effectively. Yeah. And it gave us brand new characters, it gave us a lot more things to laugh at, it gave us a pretty gripping story about, like, you know, and also, you know, telling about, you know, this whole feeling about being ugly once again, and also, you know, being pretty, and, you know, then being taken into far, far away, like, you know, this whole place that feels like Hollywood, and is just, you know, abstract from, like, the real world and everything like that. I think what they were able to do there, I think, you know, was obviously, you know, a very, you know, dare I say, probably one of the greatest sequels of all time, yeah, I think we could say.
I do agree. Now, here's the thing that you have to remember when it comes to Shrek, that it was the unexpected hit. It was essentially like Disney's equivalent of The Lion King, where that was the B project. Pocahontas was supposed to be the A project, the project that everybody was taking seriously, the massive project that they put all of their best people forward. And The Lion King was essentially like Hamlet, but Disney-fied, and it was in Africa, but it blew everybody away. Same thing with Shrek, in which, like, Shrek was the punishment project. It was known as the Gulag. All of the animators that didn't meet up to snuff with Prince of Egypt were essentially moved there. And if you've ever seen Did You Know movies where they were talking about the fact that Shrek was created out of spite when Jeffrey Katzenberg, you know, he quit Pixar because, you know, he felt that he was not appreciated in the Disney company with all the hard work that he did with essentially creating the renaissance for, you know, the Disney animation department. And we had Michael Eisner, who was the CEO of Disney at the time, who absolutely hated him. He basically just said, you know what, I'm going to do my own animation studio and I'm going to fill it with blackjack and hookers. And, you know, bringing in Steven Spielberg and David Gelfin to do DreamWorks. And basically, you know, they started off with Ants, and Ants was a fairly decent movie. And then you had Prince of Egypt, which was, for Jeffrey Katzenberg, that was supposed to be like the magnum opus. And then it did make a pretty good amount of money, and it's even gotten critically acclaimed. But Shrek was the one that pretty much put DreamWorks on the map. But then after a while, they started doing more 2D films again, because, you know, they felt that, okay, you know, that was the punishment project. They didn't expect it to become the giant monster hit that it was. You know, we had Spirit Sally and the Cimarron, then we had, you know, we had Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas, and then Shrek 2 pretty much was the beginning of the golden era for DreamWorks, where every single time that you think of DreamWorks around the 2000s, Shrek 2 is essentially where it all started. It took everything that made the first Shrek movie and made it even better. And throughout the course of a decade, that was when DreamWorks was at its high horse. They produced some of the most critically acclaimed films in terms of entertainment and comedy, and it became pretty influential in 3D animation in its own right, being very more cartoony and a little bit more slapsticky than compared to Pixar, where they're dealing with more grounded and realistic stories that can be enjoyed by both kids and adults. So yeah, we're talking about two massive pedigrees of where the animation industry changed forever, where we have Toy Story, which basically was the starting point of 3D animation coming into life, and then we have Shrek 2 basically becoming a major competitor for not only for Disney, but also for Pixar, and delivering great comedic films, and essentially, like, having a whole bunch of copycats and, you know, like, clones of Shrek coming in over the course of the 2000s. So, yeah, I think that we're dealing with a really good competition here.
I would say that's, you know, Shrek rattled Disney, I think we can all say, because, you know, what was Disney's response to Shrek? It was Chicken Little. And so, yeah, that's, I think you could say, you know, Shrek definitely changed the game for a lot of people. But, you know, at the same time, Toy Story, dare I say, maybe even Shrek probably wouldn't be around if Toy Story hadn't come first. Keep this in mind, because...
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we already know the story that the original idea of Shrek was Chris Farley voicing a Shrek. It was a 2D animation style. By the way, look it up. It looks absolutely horrendous. And yeah, I mean, there was a lot of developmental hell that was going on over the course of a few years where they didn't know what animation style to go for. They thought that they wanted to have Steve Martin voice as Shrek, but then Chris Farley came into the picture. And then Chris Farley died of a drug overdose, and so they brought Mike Myers into the picture. But then Mike Myers, after he recorded his lines, he wanted to do the whole thing all over again, so they spent another $2 million on lip syncing. And then there was the whole debacle about, like, changing the original story by William Steig and making a whole bunch of pop culture references and basically flaming middle fingers to Disney because Jeffrey Katzenberg wanted to get major revenge on Michael Eisner and make him fall out of his high horse. There's a reason why Lord Farquaad looks the way he does. He's essentially a caricature of Michael Eisner. Duloc is essentially Disney World. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have a case in which when we have the influential 3D movie versus the cultural zeitgeist. Anyway, so yeah, going into the previous question that I asked you, let me just answer mine first for Pixar. I understand the cultural significance of Toy Story, but I wouldn't, again, put it in my personal favorite because I have favorites that it means a lot to me. Like, The Incredibles is one of my all-time favorites, and Finding Nemo might be my personal favorite because, as you guys know, when I was in high school, I worked at a museum, and it had an aquarium that had actually a collection of aquatic creatures and fish that they actually got over from New Zealand that all the kids were pointing out that, you know, all the clownfish that we had was that was Nemo. And I worked at that museum for almost a year and then I left it to go to college. Yeah. And
but the one thing I would argue about that is that, I mean, like, while Finding Nemo, I do agree with you, is a very good movie. And also Finding Dory also is a worthy sequel as well. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know, the fish are as iconic characters, I guess, to say, of, like, you know, Woody, Buzz, Mr. Potato Head, you know, Bo Peep, things like that. Like, you know, Jesse and, you know, also, you know, the Roundup Gang and things like that. I think that, you know, those characters, I think, you know, stand out a lot more, I think. And I bet you could probably argue, well, maybe the Finding Dory characters, the Finding Nemo characters would stand out more if they had, like, four sequels. I totally get that.
Sure.
But, I mean... I would argue that, you know, again, I think, you know, Toy Story was, you know, the movie that brought 3D animation basically to the, you know, to the table.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I was just listing off my personal
favorite. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, but I think if we had to, you know, if we're really going to go to war and we really were going to, you know, put Shrek, you know, put something up against Shrek, I feel more comfortable putting up against Toy Story than I would feeling against Finding Nemo.
I do agree, yeah. But anyway, so as for our favorite DreamWorks film, so we said that Shrek 2 was according to us and according to the listeners at the time. So, I mean, for you personally, is Shrek 2 your favorite DreamWorks film?
Right now, off the top of my head, given the fact that, you know, it's the one that we're going to put up against Toy Story, I think I'd have to say yeah, because with the Shrek franchise, well, you got Shrek, you've got Donkey, you've got Princess Fiona, and, you know, you've got this really, you know, odd, you know, three pairing. I mean, the only other three pairing in animation, I could say that probably come close to even, you know, these three, are probably going to be, you know, Manny, you know, Sid, and Diego in Ice Age,
okay.
I think I would say. So, I mean, like, you know, this is a great bunch of people. On top of that, like you said, they've got great chemistry with one another. You know, they can do great stories with them. I mean, the stories are possibly endless because they're in fairy tales, mm-hmm. for crying out loud. So I think there's more possibility with that. But, you know, so I think if you had to, you know, say, oh, I've got a film that has, like, you know, a lot more possibility than Toy Story does. And Toy Story's got a lot of possibility. Like, you know, it's toys, you know, like in a ginormous world where they can easily get lost and, like, adventures and, you know, all sorts of nooks and crannies of, like, you know, the real world where humans live. I mean, and also forget the Pixar fairies, you know, that's, you know, all the rabbit holes we can go down with that. So I think, you know, Shrek, I think, is probably the best movie I would say to put up against Toy Story.
Yeah, I do agree. Now, whether it's your personal favorite...
Personal favorites. I mean, I do. Well, this is the thing, you know. I do like Shrek 2, and so I mean, we'd have to go through like DreamWorks again. I think probably to say, you know, could I pick a? I mean, Prince of Egypt obviously is another personal favorite of mine. But I mean, whether it be, you know, you put up against Toy Story, I think
it's like apples and oranges at this point. But yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you. Now, if we were putting this against Toy Story, then yes, I would put in Shrek 2. But again, personal favorite. I would say, yes, Prince of Egypt is probably one of my personal favorites, if not my personal favorite DreamWorks animated film. So, yeah, I think that with introductions out of the way, let's get into the best of the best. So, we have Toy Story versus Shrek 2.
Okay, so I think the first thing we need to do is, maybe first let's look at the stories of both movies. So, I mean, everyone who's familiar with Toy Story, I think, knows what the story is. So, you know, well, there's going to be a party over at the house of
Andy.
And so, you know, Woody has always been Andy's favorite toy. Then in comes Buzz Lightyear, and he is basically the new super cool toy that basically can, like, you know, his helmet does the whoosh thing. And so, like, you know, he's the new kid on the block. And the only thing about it is that Buzz, you know, and this is a lot to, you know, in way borrows from the Raggedy Ann movie. So, you know, very good callback to, you know, some of the, you know, the cult classic, you know, toy movies. Buzz thinks he actually is Buzz Lightyear of Star Command. And so, you know, Woody obviously has a horrendous time, you know, trying to convince him that he's actually a toy. And but then, you know, disaster strikes when he ends up wanting to go to Pizza Planet, but he knows he's going to end up taking Buzz, so he knocks Buzz out the window to, be able to become the toy that Andy brings in. But then they realize, you know, then in a, you know, accidentally, you know, has the toys believing that, you know, he's the one who actually knocked the window out of jealousy and not because he wants to go to Pizza Planet. So obviously all the toys turn on him at that point. So then, you know, Woody is then put in a situation where he needs to get Buzz back, in order to, you know, we get reacting to good graces with, like, the rest of the toys, and this is all before moving day. So, I mean, like, I mean, I would say that, you know, Toy Story, even though, like, what you think is pretty, you know, on the face of it, you wouldn't think would be, you know, that great of a story. It's actually quite gripping, and actually quite, you know, it has a lot of drama involved, and like that, and, like, you know, all the characters you can definitely get, you know, involved with, and kind of see their point of view about the way that they see Woody, or the way that they perceive themselves as toys. I think it has a lot of strengths in you towards it in regards to Toy Story.
Yeah, and as for Shrek 2, the story goes like this. Taking place immediately after the first movie where Shrek and Fiona got married, they're celebrating their honeymoon and they're having a wonderful time just being in love with each other. And then, of course, we have Prince Charming coming over to the castle to rescue Princess Fiona, but, you know, she's already been rescued. And so it was supposed to be that he was supposed to rescue Princess Fiona and then bring her to far, far away so that they can get married and they can live happily ever after. But yeah, in this case, happily ever after doesn't always necessarily mean a cookie cutter story. And so we have Shrek and Fiona coming back from their honeymoon and receiving a message that, you know, Fiona's gotten married. And so they're going to be brought back to far, far away. But little do they know that it wasn't Prince Charming who rescued her, it was Shrek, and everybody in the kingdom, including her parents, who are the king and queen of Far, Far Away, are shocked by this. And so we have the fairy godmother, who is the mother of Prince Charming, telling the king that Shrek needs to go away, Fiona should marry Prince Charming. And so we have the king hiring Puss in Boots to assassinate him. Doesn't work out. They actually become really close friends. And Shrek wants to essentially make Fiona happy by changing who he is. And so he gets a potion that is able to make everything happily ever after. He gets transformed into a human. Fiona gets transformed back into a human as well. And there's a lot of twists and turns that involve with Shrek and Fiona trying to decide on what should, you know, each other want in order for them to make themselves happy. So yeah, there's a lot of complexities to both stories. And And with the case of Shrek 2, I mean, it elevates everything that the first movie was able to bring in. You know, we have, you know, a lot of cases in which Shrek needs to make a decision on what does he want to make, to, you know, what does he want to do? Does he want to sacrifice everything that he loves so that he can be able to make his wife happy? Does he want to turn into a human and stay that way, even though that he doesn't like it? He wants to be an ogre. It does a really great job of, again, breaking away the conventions that you would see in fairy tales. We got that with the first movie, but in the second movie, it elevates it even more, where the fairy godmother tells Shrek that ogres do not live happily ever after. And yeah, usually in this case, yeah, the ogres are the bad guys and they always lose, and then the prince and the princess would always be together. So again, it breaks a lot of the traditions that we would expect to see in a traditional fairy tale, which is what the idea of the first movie was, but it did it so much better. So yeah, I think that with the chemistry of, we have Shrek, Donkey, and then Puss coming into the picture, it's a great chemistry. Shrek and Donkey are really great together. Shrek and Puss are really great together. Donkey and Puss are really great together. They're able to do a whole bunch of different things that is able to make it stand out without feeling too derivative. And yeah, there's a lot of elements that are even better in the first movie. The soundtrack is amazing. It's able to take the pop culture songs were featured in the first Shrek movie and elevated even further. And, you know, Accidentally in Love, which was the first song that's featured in the movie, is an original song exclusive to the movie, and it fits so well. It makes so much sense. I even said this in the Dream Machine discussion. I actually like this song better than Smash Mouth when they did All Star. I'm sorry. I don't think that All Star fit with Shrek. I don't. It was supposed to be for Mystery Men. Okay, moving on. Yeah.
So I think, you know, but in regards to, you know, the music, I think in Toy Story, I think, you know, Randy Newman, I think obviously nails it out of the park. Like, you know, You've Got a Friend in Me, like, you know, really nails the relationship between Woody and Andy in this. And then obviously, you know, like, you know, the moment that, you know, Buzz Lightyear finds out that he's actually a toy and not that, you know, Randy Newman obviously catches that as well. Like, you know, where having Buzz, like, go through some doubt and actually, you know, put his wings up, he tries to fly and then ends up falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Randy Newman captures the moment, like, you know, all the moments, like, you know, he's the whole, you know, belief of him being Buzz just fades away from him.
Yeah, that's an advantage for Toy Story, is that all the songs are all original and were written by one person and performed by one person. Whereas in Shrek 2, very similar to the first Shrek movie, they have a whole bunch of pre-existing songs that are included in the soundtrack, and they have a lot more than, say, the Toy Story movie, where it only has like a handful of songs. So what do you go for? Do you go for originality and quality, or do you go for pre-existing and quantity?
Well, I think the one thing I would defend Shrek 2 is that, you know, a lot of, like, you know, the songs that appear in Shrek 2, even though they've already pre-existed before, I think it sort of kind of makes sense for the time. Like, you know, I like, you know, I Need a Hero being sung by the fairy godmother.
Yeah, I love that performance so much.
I love it when she said that it's kind of like a villain song in the way. Like, you know, this is her trying to convince Fiona to be with Prince Charming.
Yeah, and that was Bonnie Tyler's song. What was that for? Was that for Footloose, I think?
I think, no, it was... It was part of her album called, not Ravishing, it was, what was her album called at the time?
I'm not sure what it was.
I can't remember what it was either, but I think it was one of her album short songs.
I remember it featured on Footloose.
Oh, wait, Ravishing was, like, the song that was based off, like, you know, the Hulk Hogan's rock and wrestling theme.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. He took the theme and, like, he took the rock and wrestling cartoon show theme and turned that into a Ravishing for Bonnie Taylor.
The fact that you even know that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I got all sorts of weird, you know, pop culture references in my head.
Anyway, but yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it really does decide, like, you know, what actually I think has a better, you know, more creative edge here. The fact that Randy Newman sat down and, you know, tailored songs to the characters and to the story, or was it the fact that, you know, Shrek 2 took a bunch of existing properties and were able to incorporate them and even give new spins on them, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they did, because, I mean, we complained about this in Trolls Band Together, and we control, I mean, mean, I would say we complain about this with the entire Trolls
movie.
Yeah,
I mean, Shrek 2 is not a jukebox musical, is it? Like, you know, it is. It's like its own, like, you know, fantasy movie, I guess you could say. Fantasy comedy.
Yeah, it is. But again, they popularize bringing in pre-existing songs into their films. Hmm. Whereas before, especially with a lot of Disney musicals at the time, they actually had people like Howard Ashman and Alan Menken and Tim Rice and Elton John and, you know, various people sit down and write music for the movie. Hmm. Whereas with a lot of DreamWorks films, they popularize taking pre-existing songs and having that as its soundtrack.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, given the fact that the soundtrack for Toy Story, I think, is, you know, is actually tailored to actually do what it says it's on the tin. Like, you know, it is a soundtrack for Toy Story, whereas, you know, the Shrek 2 stuff. And by the way, like, you know, they do even more of this. Like, you know, in the post-credits, they do, like, the whole, like, you know, Far, Far Away Idol, where, like, you know, they got more people, like, singing songs as well.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, do we use that to kind of, like, disqualify, you know, maybe Shrek 2's soundtrack a little bit in a way? Given the fact that they kind of, like, you know, they go over the edge on it, and, like, you know, Toy Story never did anything like that. Like, you know,
I mean, they didn't have
a karaoke dance party.
No, they had the bloopers.
Yeah, they had the bloopers. Well, that's Toy Story 2 that had the bloopers.
Oh, yeah,
not
that's right.
Not the original Toy Story.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they started the bloopers with A Bug's Life. I forgot.
Yeah, exactly. So, I would say that I think the Toy Story soundtrack, I think, is better than the Shrek 2 soundtrack.
I do agree, especially since, number one, it's original songs. It's tailored to the characters and to whatever's happening with the storyline and with the characters', you know, dilemmas and moralities. And also, You Got a Friend in Me is a very iconic song. It is featured in all four of the Toy Story movies. Everybody knows about that song. I mean, if you were to sing You Got a Friend in Me, they would immediately know where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you sing Accidentally in Love, I mean, maybe some people will know that it's from Shrek 2, but yeah, I wouldn't say that Shrek 2 is, like, well known for its music. So, yeah, I would probably give the points for Toy Story for this.
Yeah, so I think we're one apiece at the minute, I think, between Shrek 2 and Toy Story.
Yeah.
At the moment. Okay, so I think the next category I think we should go probably is the casting. And
this will be really interesting.
This will be really interesting because, let's be honest, I mean, like, Shrek is full of celebrities. I mean, like, Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz, and, you know, and on top of that...
We have Antonio Banderas, John Cleese, we have Julie Andrews, we have, like, there's so many people in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. And but I think the question is, I mean, like, do the performances of all our characters in Shrek 2 actually, you know, given the fact that they are maybe famous celebrities that, you know, will get, you know, the, you know, tickets bought and get them into the doors, you know, in every movie theater across the, you know, across the world.
AKA, I mean, the Jeffrey Katzenberg approach.
I guess so. You know, does it pay off? I mean, do the people that we see on the screen, are they too distracting, or do they actually be able to, you know, pull off the fact we believe that this is Shrek, and they believe this is Princess Fiona, and we believe that this is Puss in Boots, and we believe that this is Donkey, and things like that. And I would argue that, you know, my Myers, once again, I think, does a really good Scottish accent with Shrek, in that I believe when Mike Myers does this character, I believe right off the bat it's Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he does a very good job. Same with Cameron Diaz. I think, you know, her performance of Princess Fiona and giving her tenacity and also giving her, like, you know, her sympathy and, you know, being able to be very vibrant, I think, with the character, I think works very well as well. I think the only person who kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, I mean, Eddie Murphy just basically plays Eddie Murphy in this whole thing.
Exactly. Like, when you hear his voice, you immediately know that it's Eddie Murphy.
I guarantee you can always take lines out of the Nutty Professor and probably put it on the donkey, and, like, you know, where you wouldn't recognize the difference.
Are we talking about Professor Clump, or are we talking about Buddy Love?
I think we take either, I guess.
The Professor Clump character had, like, a much more hoarser, deeper voice, while the Buddy Love character is Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, well, yeah, okay, Buddy Love, then, I think we could say.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining, like, Donkey from Shrek basically saying, like,
see you later, chunky butt. you could see that being sent to Judge and Donkey. You could say that to Shrek, couldn't you? No, like, yeah. So, I mean,
what's up, tank ass?
Yeah, and I guess Antonio Banderas, I mean, like, he really does give a nice, you know, accent to Puss in Boots in this movie. But, I mean, like, he kind of did the same thing in Zorro as well. So, like, you know, count.
Well, hold on. I have to let you know that not only did he provide the English version of Puss in Boots, the performance, he did the Spanish and the French version. Italian.
I mean,
okay, so French.
It makes sense because he's bilingual, isn't he?
Yeah, so he did the... Yeah, Yeah, usually in a case like this, where you would have, like, different people provide the voices for the characters in different countries. I mean, we talked about Jackie Chan voicing as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, and voicing Captain Shang in Mulan in the Chinese version. But the fact that Antonio Banderas voiced him in English, Spanish, and Italian is very, very commendable.
Mm-hmm. And so, also in this movie is, actually, tell you what, the one thing I think I would say is probably would be considered a wildcard character, I think, maybe casting at the time, but probably not so much now, is Jennifer Saunders, who plays the fairy godmother in this movie.
Well, I mean, remember, they brought her as Bunty in Chicken Run.
Yeah, they did, yeah, but I think also, you know, at the time, you know, Jennifer Saunders was known for things like Absolutely Fabulous, and, you know, I think, you know, right now, Minions and Shrek 2 are probably, like, you know, her most notable roles at the minute. So, like, she's more known as a British comedian than she is kind of, like, known as, like, an international celebrity on the movie scene.
Oh, sure. I mean, in Britain, she's very well known for her comedy, absolutely. But outside of Britain, a lot of people don't really know about her acting.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, not to say that goes against her. I mean, she does a phenomenal job being a fairy godmother.
She does amazing. I do agree. She is amazing, not only with the fact that she's able to act really sweet, but she's able to act really nasty, and her singing is impeccable. She does a fantastic job.
Yeah, and also Rupert Everett plays our Prince Charming, and oh my goodness, does he basically, like, you know, get the snobbishness and also, like, you know, the pettiness of this character down very, very well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like, I have to say, I think it's a great departure from, like, Inspector Gadget, don't you think? So,
call me Claw.
Yeah.
Just one word. Like Madonna.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, the people that we see here, like, you know, I mean, Larry King plays one of the Oakley stepsisters in this movie, which is kind of bizarre. But
it is really weird.
Yeah. I think that was done for hilarities, though, I think we can say.
I just find it so crazy that John Cleese and Julie Andrews are in this movie.
And Joan Rivers plays herself. Yeah, Joan Rivers apparently is a fantasy character in the
show. Yeah, yeah. I guess it makes a lot of sense because, you know, she would always be interviewing people on the fashion shows or in any award ceremony and asking them, who are you wearing? So it makes a lot of sense.
So, I mean, in regards to the casting, I mean, like, I mean, there's not one person I think I could say there that says, oh yeah, well, this person wrong-footed in the situation. I mean, like, I think that's pretty, I mean, everyone there, I think, was pretty stellar.
Yeah, I think it's all going to come down to nitpicks for this one.
I think it will do.
Yeah,
so let's look at the Toy Story castings.
It's hard to beat. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, we have Don Rickles, we have John Ratzenberger, we have... you know, various other characters that essentially fit within these, you know, these performances. I mean, when you hear Woody, I mean, sure, Tom Hanks has a pretty recognizable voice. So does Tim Allen. I mean, it makes a lot of sense because at the time he would have been doing Home Improvement. And Tom Hanks, I mean, this was like a year before this, Forrest Gump was out, and that was an Oscar winner. So, yeah, everybody was familiar with both of these characters. Now, do they distract you from Woody and Buzz Lightyear saying, oh, that's just Tom Hanks and Tim Allen? No.
No, there's no one here, I think, we could say that, oh, hey, I know that celebrity voice. It's like, no, they haven't really gone down that route. I mean, like, you know, Laurie Metcalf was Andy's mom in this, and it's like, and also, you know, they were actually, also on top of that, I think they actually got an actual kid to actually play, you know, Andy.
An actual kid who wasn't an actor.
Yeah.
They just so happened to know the kid, and they brought him in to do the movie. That's the thing, they use less celebrities in Toy Story compared to Shrek. You got the big ones, obviously, but then you have some other... people who, you know, are just, you know, smaller characters in there. I mean, you know, sure, a lot of people know about Don Rickles and his comedy and, you know, various other things. But yeah, for the most part, you have a much smaller cast to work with. And yeah, I mean, you have Wallace Shawn, who is Rex, and you may know him for The Princess Bride, and you also have Jim Varney, who is Slinky Dog, and you may know him for the Ernest movies.
Yeah, but here's the thing about this, like, you know, you wouldn't, like, listen to Slinky Dog in his performance and connect him to Ernest.
No way! Like, we are talking about two completely different characters.
Yeah, but, like, the deliveries are way different, and I think, you know, give credit to Jim Varney, because, like, what, well, I mean, Ernest was like it was, like, he started off in commercials,
yes.
I think, and then he obviously got his own movies after that, but then, obviously, he has got more versatility, you know, to be able to say, yeah, you know, I can play this character.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, he did a very good job in that regard.
Yeah, it just makes me really sad that he was taken away from us too soon.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, looking at, like, here's the thing I would say about Pixar, which I think, you know, a lot of people here, you know, are either, like, you know, they've you know, either they the people that they know that they know can do talented voices, or like, you know, they're part of the production staff, or they, you know, besides Tim Allen and besides Tom Hanks, and you know, obviously, you know, various of you, a few others, like, you know, there's very few people that are in there that are there for name value. They're more just there for, like, you know, they can do the job.
Yeah.
So I think, dare I say, maybe, you know, Pixar probably were a bit more like, you know, they were more resourceful, I guess they could say, with their with their production staff, more than, like, you know, more than say Shrek 2, where basically they were just like grabbing just celebrities, because celebrities were actually part of, like, integral to, like, you know, actually producing, like, you know, writing or doing, like, parts of the Shrek. They were just there to do the voices.
Yeah.
And be celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're talking about the Jeffrey Katzenberg approach about, yeah, like, oh, you know, the kids wouldn't know who these people are, but the parents will, and that's how we'll get all the money to get the butts in the seats. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, you can definitely feel that apparent when you watch a DreamWorks film, especially around that time period. And there was a little bit of sprinkle of that, too, in Toy Story, because Jeffrey Katzenberg was a part of the production of Toy Story, and he wanted to take the story in a completely different direction, where he was going to make Woody a mean-spirited character. But then that was completely scrapped, which, by the way, thank God.
No, yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, and then Jeffrey Katzenberg pretty much left the project, which, good, because he would have ruined Toy Story if he would have done the story that he wanted to do. But yeah, the mentality of him wanting to bring celebrities into animated films was clearly abundant when he went over to do DreamWorks. And yeah, it's a fun fact that if you look at the original budget of Shrek 2, that half of that money went over to paying Mike Myers, Cameron Diaz, and Eddie Murphy to reprise their roles. Mm. So the other half went over to the other actors and the animation and the production. That just goes to show you about, like, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg was really caring about the performances of Mike Myers, Cameron Diaz, and Eddie Murphy. Whether they were overpaid is a completely different debate that we're not going to get into.
I guess so. I guess with the casting, I guess we've got to ask ourselves, I mean, like, are the celebrities too distracting in regards to, you know, this DreamWorks movie? And we can't kind of, like, you know, set aside our disbelief that these are voice actors, like, you know, these are celebrities in a voice recording studio. Compare that to Toy Story. Like, you know, can we, you know, we don't know the people that are, like, you know, doing the voices all that well, so therefore, you know, there's more of a believability to, like, you know, where the characters are, and we know they're not just got, like, celebrities behind them, if you will. So, like, I mean, yeah, there's Jim Varney, yes, there's Tom Hanks, and you know, yes, there's you know, where Tim Allen, but you know, they're not distracting. I would say.
Yeah, they're completely...
Eddie Murphy is distracting, I think we can say.
Yeah, but that's because Eddie Murphy's playing Eddie Murphy. Whereas, yeah, say, like, Jim Varney, he's not playing Ernest. He's playing a different character. I guess the only exception would have to be Arlie Hermy, who is the voice of the sergeant of, you know, all the little soldier toys. And he was the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's not, like, a massive presence in the movie. He's there in the first act, and maybe, you know, towards the end of the first act, if you will,
yeah,
getting into the second. So I mean, like, and also, like, you know, he makes, like, another brief appearance, like, you know, in the final final third of the movie, when,
yeah,
you know, they find out that, you know, that, you know, Andy got a puppy for Christmas,
right?
So I'm gonna go, I mean, I don't know if you'll disagree with me on this or not, but I'm gonna go for it anyway. I would say Toy Story has the better casting, just by a few .1%, you know, of that, I would say. I would put Toy Story over Shrek 2, but not by much.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think, because even though that Shrek 2 has a lot more celebrities in their mixture, you know, does more characters count for a better quality film? I mean, the reason why Toy Story works so well was because they had a smaller cast, but you remember them all. And I think that at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter who voices them, just as long as they're able to capture the essence of them. And the casting is phenomenally done well. And I think that they even include more voice actors into the mixture than, say, Shrek 2, where they add more celebrities in there. You have Debbie Derryberry, who voices as the aliens, and you have Bill Farmer in a few roles, and you have Scott McAfee in a few roles. So, yeah, they do incorporate not only, you know, other voice actors, but they also include actors that they got exclusively that you don't hear anywhere else. So, yeah, I would say that it's less distracting than, say, DreamWorks Shrek 2, where you can clearly hear that, oh yeah, that's Eddie Murphy. Yes, that's Mike Myers. Yes, that's Cameron Diaz. That's John Cleese. Yes, that's Julie Andrews. Like, you know who they are, especially if you are familiar with watching a lot of movies and TV shows like we are. So I guess by a slight margin, I will give the casting over to Toy Story again.
Cool. Okay. So right now, Toy Story 2 1 up on Shrek 2.
Okay.
Okay. So what we're going to do is the next category.
Animation next?
Yeah, let's do the animation.
Okay, so animation's next.
So I think we could... I mean, this is going to be a bit of an unfair advantage, I think, for Shrek 2, because obviously this is a sequel to Shrek, and so they've had an opportunity to basically to update the visuals, you know, put more believability into the characters, and, you know, I remember, the Shrek 2 characters even appeared in, like, an Intel commercial to, like, to show how, you know, how detailed they actually are. So, like, you know, the technology at that time, you know, when Shrek 2 was released was far better than it was. And Toy Story, I mean, like, it's the first, you know, computer animated, you know, generated movie that, you know, Disney or anyone else that actually ever produced. So, like, I think there's no really real debate here. I think we can obviously say Shrek 2 is obviously the winner over Toy Story, but not by much. I mean, it's a bit of an unfair advantage, I think, that Shrek 2 has over Toy Story, to
okay,
be
well,
honest.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I would say that it does play a lot with its setting, whereas, like, you have Toy Story, which takes place in Andy's room, you have Pizza Planet, you have Sid's room, and then you have the scene in which when they're trying to chase the moving truck, whereas Shrek 2, you have, you know, Shrek and Fiona going to their honeymoon, you have Prince Charming going over to the desert and finally to the castle, you have Far, Far Away, you have the prison, you have a whole bunch of...
You have Shrek in, like, one model, then turning over to the human model, and then also you have Donkey turning into a stallion, and so...
You have rain effects, you have water effects, you have sun effects, you have snow effects, you have a whole bunch of different elements are playing, different settings are playing.
Yeah, the dramatic, you know, losing of the gumdrop button as, you know, it gets launched in by a catapult. Like, you know, it's like, there's a, you know, this thing has everything. Also, there's the, you know, the dramatic dance, you know, number at the very end of the movie, and, you know, and then obviously you got more of like that, you know, towards the end of it. So, like, yeah, I think, you know, Shrek 2 had, you know, has a massive advantage over Toy Story.
Yeah,
and, Toy Story is very, you know, when you watch it, like, in high definition, it's very jagged.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a little bit rough around the edges. I mean, when you see the humans, they look not very good. The dog looks not very good. And yeah, the reason why the toys hold up better in today's audiences is because, well, it's made of plastic. And
imagine if Toy Story was directed by George Lucas. I don't think, you know, that version of Toy Story, I don't think would be around for much longer, I think, if he had his hands on it.
Yeah, it's going to look like the Toy Story 4 look.
Yeah, it'll look like Woody shot first as well. But I always make that joke. But, so, yeah, I mean, like, you know, yeah, the dog looks pretty terrible. The humans don't look all that great either as well. Like, they have to do, like, far shots, so, you know, from, like, Andy and that. And then when they do the close shots in them, you can tell, like, you know, they weren't really ready yet for humans in Pixar movies.
Yeah, there's a reason why they waited until The Incredibles in order for humans to be in the main characters.
Well, then they had Universal Man, and then that was the end of their worries.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so again, for animation, and I know it's not fair, but we're going to have to give it to Shrek 2.
I mean, well, there's no choice. Like, you know, it's a better looking animated movie.
So, yeah, so, yeah. Okay, so let's see what we got so far. So Shrek 2 has story and animation. Pixar has music and voice cast.
Yeah.
So I guess let's do one more category.
Yeah, so I think maybe we should probably go with overall reception.
Like, yeah, like, yeah. Let's talk about overall reception and cultural significance.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very hard because, like, you know, the Toy Story as a franchise, I think, is universally known and universally loved. Everybody loves Toy Story, regardless how many sequels that they bring out, but let's just focus on the original movie. I mean, like, this was a huge movie when it first came out. I mean, like, you know, it did a phenomenal box office, and, you know, even when it went to, like, you know, DVD and went to VHS, you know, for sales, like, you know, it did really, really well in home release. And so, like, I mean, everybody I probably would imagine who, you know, was in that era basically has a Toy Story VHS or a Toy Story DVD somewhere in their cupboard, and if not, basically they're watching it on Disney Plus. Like, you know, it still exists to this day. So I think, dare I say, I think it has that, you know, massive significance in that regard. Also, you know, the fact that it's, like, you know, it was the first ever computer-generated movie, like, you know, it created a lot of media buzz, I think, when it first came, because this didn't look like what other movies looked like at the time. Like, you know, it was a massive departure from where animated movies were at the time.
Yeah, so, and as for Shrek 2, it defined on what a sequel should be. I mean, sure, we had Toy Story 2, which came out about a few years before them, but Shrek 2 was able to emphasize everything that a sequel should be. Not to mention the fact that it popularized DreamWorks. This is the film that was able to put DreamWorks inside of a lot of people's consciousness. I mean, sure, you know, after the original Shrek, we had Chicken Run, we had Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron, we had The Road to El Dorado, and we had Sinbad, The Legend of the Seven Seas. And, you know, some of them were fairly decent, but it wasn't until Shrek 2 that DreamWorks was the mainstay in animated films for the next decade, where it competed alongside with Pixar. It was a debate about which animation studio was better. It was the fact that it was able to bring in a lot of the comedy, a lot of the quick reactions, a lot of the music, a lot of the characters that a lot of people really enjoyed. And I think that it has a cultural significance that is really important. I mean, let's be honest, when you think of pop culture references and memes and all the goofy stuff that you would expect, I mean, you think of Shrek. Imagine, you know, the fact that we have all of the crazy memes that we have for, you know, all the animations. There's the Shrek is Love, Shrek is Life. There's even Shrek Fest, Shrek Retold. Like, the fact that Shrek has been a mainstay in our pop culture iconography cannot be understated.
Yeah. So, let's look at, it's kind of a bit unfair to kind of, like, compare the box office as well, because, like, you know, in Shrek 2, I mean, did, like, $195.3 million at the box office, and, I mean, so, I mean, when did Shrek 2, like, you know, come out? I'm trying to remember what the, yeah, 2004,
yeah,
that came out. So, I mean, we're going to have to do some number crunching here, because Toy Story did the $394.4 million at the box office, but that was in 1995. I mean, like, you know, you round up for inflation for both of these movies. Tell you what, I'll do that right now. And in regards to responses, like, I mean, you talk about, like, you know, the cultural response to Shrek. I mean, what's the cultural response to Toy Story?
I mean, here's the thing, like, Toy Story is massive in terms of the fact that it was the first animated movie that ever came out. I mean, it changed the game forever. Whereas with 2D animation, it was seen as like old hat, where everybody wanted to go into 3D because it was brand new. And let's be honest, Pixar popularized 3D animation to the point in which a lot of the animation films, they tried to copy off of the Pixar thing by just being 3D. And 3D animation films looked kind of samey for like the next 15 years because of what Pixar and DreamWorks were doing. And it wasn't until like recent films over the years, like the Peanuts movie and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, in which it could be like, hey, we can do animation completely different. We don't have to stick with the same cookie cutter Pixar stuff. For the longest time, Pixar's Toy Story was the standard of 3D animated films. So
So I think I've worked this out. So so basically, in regards, if Toy Story came out today, it would basically be if the box office of that today would be $807 million at the box office.
Wow.
Okay, but mind you, here's this thing. If Shrek 2 had came out today, the box office for this will be $1.5 billion.
Oh my god, that's Minion levels of money.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess if, I mean, again, we're not giving it on box office, but, I mean, Shrek 2, obviously, you know, if it came out today, would have made a hell of a lot more money than, you know, Toy Story if that came out today. So, there's that to kind of contend with as well in 2024. But, I mean, I think I have to agree with you. I think, like, you know, in regards to how much of a phenomenon I think Shrek 2 has been compared to Toy Story, I think. I mean, yeah, there's memes of Toy Story as well, like, you know, there's the, you know, the memes everywhere, like, you know, themes like that, but, you know, I think, you know, Shrek, I think, gets more of a reaction, I think, online, I think, than Toy Story, I think, so it might be done, but maybe it might be a bit unfair there. But,
yeah, but I mean, as for the cultural significance, I mean, Toy Story wins this by a landslide, because it was literally the first animated movie that ever came out.
Yeah, but just because you're the first doesn't necessarily mean you're the best. I mean, like, I'm looking at you, Flintstones, but I'm gonna, you know, as much as I love Toy Story, and don't get me wrong, I love Shrek as well, I mean, if we had to look at, like, you know, the movie I think that everybody would probably talk about, I think maybe Shrek probably would, like, you know, be the more culturally significant one than Toy Story.
I disagree. I think that Toy Story is definitely the more significant one, because, yeah, even though, here's the thing, I understand that you know, when you look at all the other Pixar movies that have come out since then, yeah, Toy Story, you could definitely see that it lost a little bit of its shine. But you cannot deny the fact that without Toy Story, all the other 3D animation films wouldn't even exist.
Wow. Okay. So basically, I think we've got a tie.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. So, all right then. So everybody, we're going to have to sign a peace treaty between Shrek 2 and Toy Story. I mean, we equally believe that both of them are, you know, equals in this matter. So.
All right. So now that we've gone over to the best, let's go into the worst.
Oh, boy. Okay, then. So, if, for those of you who tuned into Pixmix and Dream Machine, we not only just did the top five best, we also did the top five worst as well. The number one worst movie that we decided at Dream Machine was Shark Tale, and the worst movie we decided at Pixmix was Cars 2.
And
so,
yeah, and since then, nothing has changed.
Probably not, no, but who is the definite worst?
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
Where do we begin? Okay.
Right. So, let's talk about the story. So, I mean, Shark Tale effectively is, you've got this fish called Oscar, who's played by Will Smith, and, you know, he is just, you know, absolutely down on his luck. He's massively in debt to the mob, and, you know, he's basically just looking to be somebody because he looks for up to, you know, his father, you know, who he didn't believe, you know, really lived up to his expectations. So, you know, he ended up trying to, you know, acquire a lot of money and doing all sorts of, like, you know, crazy schemes, and then he ends up not being able to pay and ends up nearly being, you know, being whacked basically for his problems. Only thing that happened is that basically during the times that, you know, he was about to be, you know, tortured to death, you know, he's interrupted basically by a shark. Now, the one of the sharks in this, and you have to forgive me the name of the it wasn't Sebastian. Who was the name of the other shark?
Are you talking about the one who was played by
Robert De Niro, like played by
Jack Black?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So,
Lenny.
Yeah, Lenny. So Lenny is the he's basically been showing up the other sharks because he decides that he's eating other fish is, you know, not in his nature. He decides he wants to be a vegetarian. But Robert De Niro, who plays like, you know, the Godfather. Father Shark and all this is not happy about this.
Because of course he is.
Decides that Lenny needs to be sent out to basically, you know, get some, earn some respect for, you know, for his, mafia shark gang. So he tries to eat Oscar. It doesn't go very well. And then when one of his brothers tries to intervene in order to do it, he gets hit by an anchor. Now, everyone believes that, and because of that, everyone thinks that Oscar is a shark slayer and then ends up being, you know, in fame and then ends up basically living the high life. And so, you know, but not only that, but, you know, the sharks basically are after Oscar because, you know, they were holding responsible basically for killing one of their fair members of their mafia family. So, I mean, that's basically the story of, you know, of Shark Tale. And so, I mean, here's the thing about this. I mean, if you have to look over, you know, the warts and, like, all the disgusting, you know, veins of Shark Tale, I mean, that story, I mean, is, you know, could work in a way. But unfortunately, it's like held down. But mind you, at the time that Shark Tale was around, I mean, the liar reveal story hadn't really gone become a cliche. I don't think too much at that point. So, I mean, I think that has something going for it. But, I mean, they had, in, you know, if you could strip out everything else that we know and we hate about Shark Tale, I mean, the story is pretty standard. I mean, like, you know, it's not offensive in any particular way, I don't think.
It's just the characters are offensive.
The characters are the problem, not, I think.
Yeah, the characters needed some more tweaking. The story is just whatever.
Yeah, I think so. But then let's get to Cars 2.
Oh, God. Okay, so let me talk about this one so I can give you a break. Okay, so we have Mater, who's traveling around with Lightning McQueen during the World Grand Prix. And then we have a secret agent known as Finn McMissile, who thinks that Mater is a secret agent, and they're trying to find out some interesting information about this environmentally friendly fuel known as Alanol. And all of the other cars are reacting pretty decently. decently with Alanol and all of the other cars that are inside using like regular fossil fuel are not reacting very well. And so they hire Mater so that he can be able to investigate on why the cars are acting this way during the Grand Prix. And, you know, Mater is acting like a complete idiot because, you know, he thinks that, oh, you know, this is really cool, you know, that they think that I'm a secret agent. But, you know, it's the secret agent and all of the people are saying like, oh, well, you know, the cars are saying like, oh, you know, he's just pretending to be a dumb hillbilly. It's like, you know, when's he going to be like a cool secret agent like we thought he was? Yeah, there's like this huge plot twist that just like is pretty like, I don't understand how this is supposed to be, but at the same time, it's pretty obvious that he was the bad guy, and how did Mater figure this out, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the story is not about Lightning McQueen, like it was in the first movie, in which it's supposed to be a story where he's supposed to humble himself, like being incredibly cocky, and then essentially destroying the small town of Radiator Springs at Route 66, and he's supposed to learn a humble lesson about, you know, being good and not being cocky, and, you know, sometimes you have to eat your humble pie in order for you to, you know, understand the lesson. And Mater was a side character. You know, he was like the little companion to Lightning McQueen, showing him the ropes. But I guess he became so popular because of Larry the Cable Guy, they decided to give him his own storyline. And yeah, about that.
Yeah, so, yeah, so basically we've gone through like both the stories.
Here's the thing. The one hand you have Shark Tale, which it has a pretty standard story with the stupid liar reveal thing that was not much of a cliche, but you know, it's passable because, you know, it's the characters that suck. And then you have a storyline which is completely off of left field from what the first movie was, in which it was a spy movie. So it's like, okay, do you want to take a standard story that has a lot of cliches that people hate, or you just go a complete 180 of a different story arc and a story structure that is not familiar with what the first movie brought in?
Yeah, basically, what do you want? Standard story or basically badly told Johnny English? I think that's basically what we got with here. And you know something? I mean, I'm going to say that probably, you know, Cars 2's story is probably worse than Shark Tale.
I agree.
Right? But, I mean, here's the thing. If you strip away, I mean, again, you strip away everything that you hate about Shark Tale, I mean, you just leave the skeleton and, like, you know, just the story. Like, you know, this is a story that could be told in pretty much any other animated movie, effectively. So, which is not necessarily offensive or anything, like, wrong or anything like that. It just ends up being kind of like, you know, just generic movie. Whereas Cars 2, you know, like, you know, this Cars was like, you know, a very, you know, I wouldn't say it was our favorite movie, but, you know, a lot of people did gravitate towards Cars. And so, I mean, the fact that they end up with Cars 2, you know, as a sequel is severely disappointing, you know, the way that they came with the story.
Even fans of the first and third Cars movie do not like Cars 2.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, right now, I think in regards to like being the worst, I'd have to give it to Cars 2.
Okay. Characters. Easy. Shark Tale. Worst characters.
Well, let's investigate that in a bit more detail.
Okay, for Oscar is terrible. I mean, I hate him. I hate him so much.
Yeah, we do. And so, I mean, well, anyway, we're focusing on
characters.
We're focusing on characters. Yeah, Oscar is a terrible protagonist.
He is worse than Mater. At least Mater is just lovably stupid, whereas he is offensively terrible. Like, yeah. He does this on purpose. Like, he knows, he does all these stupid decisions, and he's like, he should know better. He has friends who are trying to help him out, and he does a whole bunch of stupid decisions that essentially get him even into more trouble, whereas Mater is actually trying to help Lightning and trying to be by his side. And, yeah, he's just, you know, he's just put in the wrong situation, and he doesn't know any better. He's the lovable idiot. I mean, sure, I don't like Mater because I don't like Larry the Cable Guy, but, you know, he's trying to do good. Oscar, I hate. I don't like him.
Yeah, well, I mean, compare that to Cars 2, where basically you got Finn McMissile, basically, you know, is easily fooled and thinking that Mater basically is like some kind of super spy.
I mean, again, you know, that's just the writing. That's not the character.
And Mater's just Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, Larry's exactly. Mater is just Larry the Cable Guy. Kind of like Donkey is essentially, you know, voiced by Eddie Murphy. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and so I mean, like, you know, you'd think Lightning McQueen would probably have more of a role in this, but he doesn't. Like, you know, he basically just racing around.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, he is barely in this movie.
Yeah, and Miles Axelrod Rogues, who's played by Izzy Izzard. Like, you know, he's just your generic, like, twist villain, effectively. Like, you know, there's no anything, like, redeeming of him, I guess. I mean, he's obviously a villain, so there's not anything redeeming of him, but, you know, like, again, I mean, I just don't like him as...
Yeah,
you know,
I don't like him because, I mean, you may think that, okay, using an environmentally friendly fuel to power your cars would be essentially a good thing. Like, in the point of our lives, and what's going on right now, as of the making of this podcast, we're talking more about using electric cars or hybrid cars so that we can be able to protect the environment and we can be able to use less fossil fuel so that we can be able to go around using better ways of, you know, transportation. But this villain essentially is just saying that, okay, I'm going to retroactively make my environmentally fuel, you know, stuff bad on purpose so that it makes fossil fuel good again. I don't understand this.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. So it's just this... But, I mean...
Wait a step back and using fossil fuel for another 50 years, you jerk.
Yeah, well, anyway, so, I guess you maybe, like, I mean, we can talk about, like, you know, cultural significance, I think, later on in the, in this round.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, I do, it's a tough one, like,
I don't remember a lot of the characters in Cars 2, to be quite honest, so I can't...
All the Cars 2 characters are effectively idiots, and all the characters in Shout Out mean-spirited, and like, you know, so I guess what is worse?
I said this, and I will say it again, and I have no apologies, Shark Tale has worse characters.
Okay, well, I guess I'll go with you then. I'll say
yeah, because, I mean, you said, I mean, yeah, you sure you have, like, a decent amount of characters. I mean, sure, you have, like, you know, the fish who's helping Oscar, the one who's played by Renee Zellweger, who's willing to sell off her grandmother's jewelry to give Oscar the money so that he could pay off the mob. Lenny by Jack Black, I mean, he's a nice character too, but then all the other characters are just, like, either idiots or mean-spirited or just inconsequential. It's like, yeah, you have a mixture of all awful, while as in Cars 2, you have essentially like idiot, 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 bad guy, idiot, barely existing the story.
Yeah. Okay. Right then, so I think next we're going to the cast, and so as they're going to one apiece. So here's the thing about this, like, and as I knock over my water. Let's look at basically the cast of both, you know, Shark Tale and of so let's start with Shark Tale first. So unfortunately, you know, it's Will Smith playing Will Smith, Robert De Niro playing Robert De Niro, Jack Black plays Jack Black, and Martin Scorsese plays Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
everyone plays themselves in this movie.
I mean, I can't, but here's the thing, Cars 2 also goes through the same thing. You have Larry the Cable Guy plays Larry the Cable Guy. You have Michael Caine playing Michael Caine. You have Owen Wilson playing Owen Wilson. So they're essentially the same problem.
Exactly. And also, you know, John Lasseter is also a character in this movie as well.
Of course he is.
Yeah, which I think, you know, you think we're giving some more thumbs down. You know, like, and also, Michael Caine's also in this movie as well. And I mean, to be fair, I mean, he does a pretty good job with Finn McMissile.
I mean, sure, but again, he's a secret agent. I mean, you know, we've had Michael Caine, you know, he was Alfred in the Dark Knight movie, so it's not too much of a surprise he can get that elegance and class.
Yeah, I mean, for the Cars 2 is a pretty motley crew of cast. I mean, like, you know, good grief. You've got Owen Wilson, you've got John Lasseter, you've got Larry the Cable Guy, you've got Michael Caine, you've got Eddie Izzard, you've got Bruce Campbell, like, you know, Evil Dead Bruce Campbell playing a character in all of this. You've got Bonnie Hunt, like, you know, he's just, it's, I mean, like, Lewis Hamilton also makes an appearance in Cars 2. I completely forgot about that.
What, like, I think, wasn't that in the British version?
It was, yeah, I think so. And so, yeah, like, it's just, it's a very weird cast. Like, you know, I don't know who the casting director was of Cars 2, but, yeah, like, but, you know, look at Shark Tale. I mean, like, their characters actually kind of make sense. You got Will Smith, who basically is, you know, okay, he is playing Will Smith, but at least they got, you know, him to play Oscar, you know, the way
yeah,
they wanted him to
play. I guess it makes a lot of sense because, you know, Oscar is supposed to be, like, a cocky, overconfident guy who gets himself into trouble. That's like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air all over again.
Yeah, I mean, at least they can say, you know, with all the people that they got into this movie, at least they knew who they were, who they wanted, and they got them. And,
yeah, I mean, you have, like, Angelina Jolie, who plays as, like, this really, you know, seductive, cute fish that Oscar is smitting all over, which makes a lot of sense because Angelina Jolie, she was getting pretty prominent in a lot of movies, especially with the Tomb Raider films, where she played as Lara Croft, so makes a lot of sense. Renee Zellweger, you know, she actually had a pretty good of mixture with a lot of roles, whether she was Roxy in Chicago or whether she was Bridget Jones in Bridget Jones' Diary. Martin Scorsese, I mean, you know, I mean, he's a well-known actor and director, but...
a lot of great whites got into it.
And then Jack Black, I mean, you know, he was huge around the 2000s. I mean, you know, Shallow Hal, School of Rock. So yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense why, you know, he did a lot of comedic roles. And here's the thing, that this would be the stepping stone for him being Po in Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess the question is going to be, like, you know, which, you know, cast is probably the worst, I think I should say. I mean, some of the characters actually in Shark Tale are celebrities that I were either used to or actually, you know, do like.
And so, here's the thing, same thing with Cars 2.
Yeah, but, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't really like Larry the Cable Guy
much.
In Wilson, I think, you know, ends up in so many bad movies. And, like, there's only two movies that I think I could probably tolerate with him, and that's in The Wedding Singer and probably Fantastic Mr. Fox. And even in Fantastic Mr. Fox, he wasn't in for that long.
Yeah, so. And what is it? It was, like, the highest rated film that he has on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is that Fantastic Mr. Fox? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Good grief. And this might be very controversial because, I mean, all these celebrities are doing, you're just playing themselves, but dare I say, I would rather hang out with the Shark Tale cast than it would with the Cars 2 cast. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying that, but, I mean, is there anything redeeming of the Cars 2 cast?
I mean, I'm trying to think. You have Michael Caine.
Like Michael Caine.
Yeah, I like Michael Caine, too. You have Bruce Campbell.
I mean, I like Bruce Campbell.
And you have Eddie Izzard.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a bit on the fence with Eddie Izzard.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, the last movie that I saw Eddie Izzard was Valkyrie, and, yeah. You know, he was all right with that.
I don't know. Anyway. I think I'm going to be very controversial saying this. Like, again, I don't like Shark Tale for all sorts of reasons, but, I mean, for the cast, I mean, you know, all they're basically just doing is getting fish to play themselves, and so I mean, but in regards to Cars 2, I mean, the problem is that they got them to play characters, but they're not very good, well written characters, so
this is really difficult, actually.
Yeah. You know, people being themselves versus people playing bad caricatures of them, you know, of other characters. It's like, I mean, the only thing I could really say, at least these celebrities are being real with themselves and written as real, you know, people. I guess maybe I have to give you keep knocking the microphone. I don't know, I'm a shocker. I mean, maybe I prefer Shark Tale over Cars 2.
It's okay. You know what? Because of your arguments, I think I'm going to have to agree.
Oh, boy. Okay, so Shark 2 gets this point.
Freaking great.
Yeah, it's not a well-deserved point, but there it is.
Whatever. Okay, music. Okay.
Music. So, they brought in Missy Elliott and Christina Aguilera basically to do, like, you know, the ending, which is basically just a remixed version of Car Wash. There's a lot of, like, you know, original music in Shark Tale. It is more pop culture and R&B and everything like that. So, you know, it's just also Motown as well, which is,
I guess it's supposed to be, like, very funky.
Very urban, having it.
Yeah, very urban, very funky, makes a lot of sense. And then for Cars 2, I mean, you're not going to get an amazing song like Highway in here, no. They brought Weezer to do the cover of You Might Think, which is a cover of The Cars. Get it? Ha ha. And then you have Collision of Worlds, which is... performed by Williams Paisley. Robbie Williams and Brad Paisley. And then you have My Heart Will Go Vroom, which is performed by Benabar. And then you have various other songs that are brought into it. But again, it's all original songs that were composed by Michael Giacchino. And
he did the original Cars movie, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so they brought someone in who understood what Cars was about, and Shark Tale effectively was basically just, like, you know, music we've kind of already seen before, really, and just had some remixes thrown into it.
Yeah, so here's the thing, well, actually, I'm wrong. It was,
They had that really bad version of, like, you know, the Bob Marley song as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It makes birds.
I guess it makes a lot of sense.
They're not birds.
I mean, the reason why they have that song in there is because Ziggy Marley is playing one of the jellyfish.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, you want, let's have a little fun homage to his dad, which, by the way, shout out to One Love, which is coming out in theaters in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I guess we're going to decide, like, you know, original versus, like, you know, music that's, you know,
okay,
you
so,
know, a very good movie. So.
Okay, so do we do what we did with Toy Story, that we give praise for the original music?
I think we have to do that, yeah, so I would give it scars too.
Okay, then.
Animation, so, yeah, the Shadowtail characters look awful.
They all look awful. They are all ugly. They are hideous.
Awful, yeah.
I don't like the designs. This is essentially DreamWorks saying, hey, you know this movie Finding Nemo? We can do that!
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they just look like, they are just fish caricatures of, like, you know, of the celebrities that actually are playing them. Like, you know, there's no originality going into these whatsoever. I mean, the only other characters, I think I could say, that probably weren't, like, exactly like the other characters, probably Lenny, probably, from, you know, because obviously he needs to, like, turn into, like, Sebastian, the whale-washing dolphin, so, like, you know, he has to, like, you know, adapt to, like, change. So, again, he's the only character, I think I could say, out of all of them, that basically doesn't look like the actual,
yeah,
you know,
everybody just has, like, big teeth and big eyes, and they just look too humanoid, whereas Finding Nemo, the reason why they look so appealing is because they're realistically proportioned.
Oh, you know what it reminds me of? Help, I'm a fish. That's basically what they did here. They basically gave all these celebrities, like, you know, that you know, all that, you know, that magic formula, whatever it was, and that turned them all into fish.
My God.
That's just, so, you know, like, Help, I'm a Fish was the origin story to Dark Tale. Oh, good grief. I love doing these explorations and finding all these connections. Good grief. Yeah.
God. Okay. So,
I still feel like my, you know, my explanation of, like, you know, where the Shadowtail basically just what happens when the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air goes basically on for 30 seasons. Eventually, they all evolve into fish. But
yeah, I guess this is like the 2000s equivalent of when a series just goes so long and it gets so stale that they go to space. It's like, no, we're gonna be underwater creatures. So essentially, we're gonna turn Fresh Prince of Bel-Air into snorks.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, but I guess, you know what, you look at Cars too. And I mean, here's the thing, like, you know, the cars aren't just, like, aren't caricatures of, like, you know, their celebrity, you know, voices or anything like that. Actually, they do actually look like original characters, to be fair.
They're just cars. They're just cars with the eyes and the mouth, and they're cars with a face.
They don't, like, you know, they didn't put, like, the celebrities' heads and mount them on cars and basically have them all talking with one another. It's not that terrible.
Yeah, that's true. And also, they don't have to worry about stupid puns of the characters. It's like, oh, here's Russell, what was it? Russell Crowfish or something like that, or you know, here's I don't remember the stupid puns that were in the movie with hey, you know, let's take these celebrities and let's make them into fish. And yeah, it was just awful. Anyway, but yeah, you do have a point. I mean, even though that some of the celebrities are there, they don't look like the celebrities. Like, Bruce Campbell is playing as a character. He's not Bruce Campbell. And Michael Caine doesn't look like Michael Caine. He's, you know, Finn McMissile. He's a secret agent. So,
yeah, and Bruce Campbell's car doesn't look like, you know, as a, like, a, you know, chainsaw, like, latched onto his, like, door handle or anything like that. Like,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Evil Dead. So,
okay, fair point. So yeah, I would say, and the animation doesn't look any more different than, say, the first original Cars. Whereas, here's the thing, that Pixar uses more or less the same animation style, where DreamWorks changes their animation depending on what it is. And I'm glad that they didn't take the same animation style into another DreamWorks film after Shark Tale, because it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't at all. So I think we can safely say that Cars 2 looks a bit better. It looks a lot better than Shark Tale.
Yes, I do agree.
Okay.
All right, let's go into the final round. Let's go into cultural significance / overall performance.
Okay, so Cars 2 is the worst performing movie in critics. I think we can all agree. And so
it is
the lowest rated Pixar movie, I think, of all time.
And it is one of the lowest grossing Pixar movies ever made. It is the one that is clearly reviled by everyone, including the critics, where they said that Pixar used to have a standard back then, where they would make films not just for kids but also for adults, and it had a lot of serious storytelling that can be able to gravitate towards everyone. When Cars came along, that was thrown off the window. And then when Cars 2 was brought back, they just emphasized the fact that It was clearly never the same. This movie came out 1 year after Toy Story 3, which was, according to a lot of people, the last good Pixar movie for the longest time until I think about Inside Out came out. But after that, they went through a few years of a slump where they just couldn't take a break on releasing mediocre movie after mediocre movie after mediocre movie. So if you want to blame where it all went downhill, blame Cars. And, also for that dry spell where it lasted for a few years, blame Cars 2.
Oh, by the way, Cars 2 was the first Pixar movie not to be nominated for an Oscar.
Wow. Okay, we'll get to the Oscars in just a minute.
Yeah, and let's go straight into it now because, Shark Tale, rightly or wrongly, was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Oscar was nominated for an Oscar.
And from what I remember, didn't Shark Tale win the Kids' Choice Awards for Best Animated Movie?
I think it might have done, yeah. So yeah. It's got a blimp. So, here's the thing about this, though, because, Will Smith, Robert De Niro, Jack Black, all these people, all these celebrities, obviously they did the Katzenberg approach, as you were talking about before, stick a load of celebrities in there, that will bring people in, and that will give, something a lot of love, but I think, a lot of people now look back at Shark Tale with buyer's remorse, I think, a lot of people now, I think when you mention Shark Tale, do not mention it, well, funny enough, there are some people, who will have, childhood memories of Shark Tale and much they liked it as a child, but then growing up they realize all the flaws in it and it's like, yeah, this probably isn't the best thing that I've seen with Will Smith in
okay
it.
fun fact about this. So I was helping with producing a Christmas special for my job, and we actually were taking our lunch break, and I was surrounded by the people who were working in the lighting department. And we were just sitting around talking about, what were our favorite movies when we were kids, and somebody brought up Shark Tale. And then they were asking me, what did I think of it? And I said, it was horrible. And they were just looking at me. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. A lot of the people that I work with are the youngest, maybe in their late teens. The oldest, I would think, would probably be, around my age, in their mid-30s. But anyway, so they were looking at me saying, why do you hate that movie? I explained to them why, and then they were silent for 10 seconds, and then they said, you're not wrong.
Yeah, but, that Shark Tale appealed to children. I think that's one thing that it may be pretty ugly looking. For probably us adults, but for a lot of kids who probably don't know any better, they probably think it's actually kind of funny and actually looks kind of cool. And, when you got a character that's talking about, I wish I had a PlayStation. I wish I had all these cool gadgets and things like that. And, it's talking the talk that, kids would be saying back in that time. You can see the appeal of Oscar. You really can. And
kind of ironic where you're talking about all the PlayStation and kids want this when aren't you the one who whenever that you're talking about Cars you always say buy the toys?
Yeah. By the way, actually, this is a fun thing I actually found on Wikipedia. Shark Tale was criticized for perpetuating negative stereotypes of Italian Americans as its antagonists.
Oof,
that was probably not very good.
I guess it makes a lot of sense because,
So the Italian American community was offended.
I guess it makes a lot of sense considering that the main villains of Shark Tale are the mob.
Yeah. John Mancini, the founder of the Italic Institute of America, protested the movie stating, "We're concerned about what preteens are learning from the outside world. They don't associate other groups as criminals. They only know Italians as gangsters. Our goal here was to de-Italianize it." The process was coordinated with the Italian-American One Voice Coalition in New Jersey.
I mean, to be fair, here's the thing. When it comes to gangster movies, Italians are going to be pretty common. It's Martin Scorsese's, you have Goodfellas and you have the Godfather movies. He kind of popularized it. I would love to see, more gangsters that are not Italian portrayed in cinema. I would love to see a movie about the Yakuza. That'd be really interesting. But the only time in which I can see that is the Yakuza Like a Dragon games on the PlayStation. So, yeah, unfortunately, when it comes to mobs, you're thinking about either one of a few categories. You're thinking about the classic American mob, the stuff that you would see with Al Capone and, during the Prohibition period. Or you would think about the Italian mobs that you would see in The Godfather and you would see in Goodfellas. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense because you have both Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese in the movie. it's a reference to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the joke, but I guess people kind of like were sick of that stereotype at this point, so they kind of found it offensive, especially since it's a kids movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as I'm aware, I mean, I might be wrong, but I think the cast too, anything like, you know, offensive to like, you know, any particular minority groups or anything like that.
I mean, I'm trying to think, because
all the British people were offended. I don't know.
But I mean, remember, this was a world tour, so they did travel to other countries. So I'm trying to remember if there was like any particular scenes that we thought it was offensive. They went to Tokyo, they went to Italy. I'm trying to remember if there was any bad stereotypes that they did in that movie. I mean, the only thing that I found pretty bad was the whole Mater thing and the whole, you know, trying to solve the mystery, even though it was pretty obvious. But I didn't think of any caricatures that I found offensive, as far as I remember. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the only thing to if anyone really cares, is that, you know, the quote-unquote American Family Association, a Christian conservative organization raised concerned about Shark Tale, suggesting that it was designed to promote exceptions of gay rights of children. But who cares about what they think? I'm actually just looking here about, you know, seeing if there's any, you know, things that, as far as I'm aware, I mean, like, I might be wrong about this, there's no, you know, controversy, I think, that Cars 2 brought up, despite the fact that it sucks. I mean, like, so...
Yeah, I think that's that essentially what it was. It sucked, and it, I mean, I think that it was able to make its money from toy sales, from what I remember.
Yeah, so, I mean, at least that's one thing that Cars 2's got about it, like, you know, as horrible as it is, you know, hey, kids, buy the toys. Like, it's
so,
just...
yeah, I mean, I think it kind of, like, ruined...
Hey, could you imagine Shark Tale toys actually being... I mean, maybe they did sell Cars Shark Tale merchandise, I don't know, but I can't imagine outselling Cars merchandise. Can you?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, so what do we find offensive? Do we find the fact that it emphasizes the stereotypes of Italians being gangsters, or do we find the offense that, well, it pretty much just ruined the standards of what Pixar was and delivering what may be its worst movie ever made?
Also, on top of that as well, Cars 2 was not nominated for an Oscar, but Shark Tale was.
What do we... I mean, how do we determine what the worst is?
They
both suck.
I know. And, it's a good question, isn't it? I mean, I can't make a decision, really.
Like, I mean, I'm trying to think because, I mean, Shark Tale is just offensively bad. The whole, like, you know,
Italian-American thing. Yeah.
Other than the Italian-American thing, the characters are way worse.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And Cars 2 isn't exactly, you know, like, you know, stellar, you know, cinematic experience either.
Yeah, only because the characters are idiots, right. And the plot is just generic, and the plot twist villain was just I don't care.
Offensive versus stupid. Like, it's just, it's, one of the modern conundrums of 2024. Here's the thing about this might be controversial, but, like, you know, until I read it in Wikipedia, I would not have known about, like, you know, the Italian-American, like, you know, controversy of Shark Tale.
Again, I just thought it was just like a reference to the fact that they got,
yeah, exactly, Robert De Niro, Robert De Niro, you know,
yeah, I just thought it was
thing.
Just like a, you know, just like a reference.
I might be wrong about this, but I don't think Jack Black's Italian-American, is he? Like,
I don't know. Maybe he is. I'm not sure.
I mean, like, so... I tell you what, putting away that to one side, and fact that, you know, Cars 2 basically brought Pixar down to its lowest level at one point, and, you know, I think DreamWorks just carried on like nothing was going on.
I'm trying to remember, this movie, when did it come out? Shark Tale, 2005, was it?
I'll have to look this up.
Because again, I know that Cars 2 came out in 2011, which, like I said before, that was the beginning of the low point for Pixar, where they were releasing some fairly mediocre...
Shark Tale came out in 2004.
Okay, so 2004. So it came out the same year as Shrek 2. Oh my god! Okay, so I'm trying to remember...
And Cars 2 came out in 2011.
Well, yeah, 2011. Okay, so let's talk about the low points that each of the companies went through. So... on the course of a few years for Pixar, after Cars 2 was released, we've had films like, let's see, Monsters University. Then we had Finding Dory, I think, came out in 2017. Mm. I'm trying to remember. You know what? I'm looking this up.
So the way I'm feeling about it right now, like, if I had to make a gut feeling, like, you know, what was like the worst, like overall reception? I think, at least, you know, Shark Tale, you know, relative is negative or positive, actually got some attention. As you were saying before, a lot of people liked Shark Tale. And
I got it. Okay, so Brave and Monsters University came out after Cars 2.
Yeah.
Oof.
Then what came out after Shark Tale?
Okay, so after Shark Tale, I have to look this up. So now that I know that it came out in 2004, the same year as Shrek 2, which is, and that's a more of a coincidence than anything, that we got Shark Tale and Shrek 2 in our discussion for best and worst. So unbelievable. Can you imagine that for DreamWorks? We released the best movie and we released the worst movie in the same year. It's like the equivalent of Avengers Endgame and Arctic Dogs for Jeremy Renner's career.
I mean, after Shark Tale, I mean, according to this, we had Madagascar, we had Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and we had, I mean, you had Over the Hedge. I mean, that would basically be the next three movies that would come out after Shark Tale.
Okay, so, yeah.
The Madagascar basically kicked off, like, you know, a bunch of movies that everyone liked.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. It became like
Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit. That was a fantastic film after that.
Yeah, that's the movie that won the Oscar that year.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, I would say DreamWorks fared better after Shark Tale than I think, you know, Pixar did after Cars 2.
Yeah, I do
so,
agree.
So, dare I say, I think, you know, we're leaning towards Shark Tale, I guess, you know, as being, you know, the best overall response.
Okay. But yeah, but here's the thing. That's the response. Now, what do we think is the worst compared to like these two movies? Is Cars 2 worse or is Shark Tale worse?
I'll say Cars 2 is worse. As much as we make fun of Shark Tale, at least, you know, there's people in there I think we can say we care about.
The celebrities, yes, but the characters suck.
I guess they suck, yeah. But, I mean, but, you know, there's a lot of people who actually do like Shark Tale, regardless of what the critics and regardless of what you and I feel. I mean, have you actually ever come across anyone who says, I like Cars 2?
No.
I haven't either. I get it's anecdotal, but, I mean, I've yet to come across somebody saying that Cars 2 is my favorite movie.
No, I have not either.
No. I think we should give it a Shark Tale. I really do.
Okay, fine. All right, so, in our discussion, the worst thing is Cars 2.
Yeah, I think we can agree with that.
I cannot believe that we're saying this, that Shark Tale is better than Cars 2.
I would actually agree. I mean, like, Cars 2 was basically the albatross that was dragging Pixar down, I think. And, you know, it's such a blemish on what is basically a perfect library of Pixar,
yeah,
I think, at the time.
Yeah, exactly. At least with Shark Tale, they only did one movie. They knew when to stop.
Yeah, like, and no one's asking for Shark Tale 2 right now.
Yeah. As for Cars, there's three sequels, there's a whole bunch of shorts, and there's a new series that's coming out.
Exactly. So at least, you know, at least when DreamWorks knew they had a dud on their hands, they knew when to stop.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so I think that wraps it up. So yeah, thank you so much for listening to our discussions of looking at different DreamWorks and Pixar films and putting them together.
Yeah, and we'll be doing more in the future.
So until then, everyone, thank you so much, and we hope to see you around. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.